Hello and welcome to Sierra Sommelier. This week we are looking at another classic episode, and I want to say I have a classic guest because this is a person I did a show with a long time ago. Ged Mayhew of the Icon Factory, welcome to Sierra Sommelier.
Thanks for having me, Dave. It's been a long time since we've done a podcast together.
It's been a very long time. I'm getting flashbacks to the old days of talking about Battlestar Galactica in a frenzy. We used to get all hopped up about that show.
Oh my God, yes. Was that like, what, 5 years ago, 6 years? That's like forever in internet terms.
It's forever in internet terms. It's practically prehistoric in internet terms.
Ah, very nice. Very nice.
Did you like that?
I love that, David. That's great.
Well, if you listen to episode 3, you know that Ged and I will be talking about an episode of the Flintstones tonight, specifically season 5, episode 12, King for a Night. It originally aired on December 3rd, 1964. I don't know what to say about the Flintstones other than it is a classic, iconic cartoon. If you want to hear more about the history and background of the Flintstones, go back and listen to episode 3 of Sierra Sommelier. That is where I go into all of that good stuff, and you can hear all about it, as well as the background of our serial pick for the week. As you know, Ged, and as listeners know, every week we suggest the perfect sugar cereal to pair with the episode of whatever cartoon we're watching.
I know. That's my favorite part of the show, actually. I can't wait to hear what you've chosen.
It is my favorite part of the show because I enjoy eating sugary cereal. And I have the body to prove it, Ged.
Me too. Although when I was a kid, my parents wouldn't let me eat sugary cereal. And I had to whenever I would sleep over at my cousin's house, that's when I would beg my aunt, can I please have cereal for breakfast? She had no qualms about feeding us all kinds of sugary cereal. So,
yeah, I had the same experience. I had to be at my friend's house or something like that. And it was, you felt like you were getting away with something.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Well, this week you can get away with a bowl of Lucky Charms. Now, I know what you're thinking. Why not Fruity Pebbles? Or why not one of the other Flintstone-themed cereals? Heck, why not a handful of Flintstones vitamins? Well, as we saw with Scooby-Doo in the Scooby-Doo branded cereal, it's a little too on the nose. It is the obvious choice. So I went with Lucky Charms because it debuted in the same year as the Flintstones, 1964.
Cool.
It features another iconic character in Lucky the Leprechaun. He's not as iconic as Fred, but everyone knows who he is. Fred's has a catchphrase that we all know in Yabba Dabba Doo. And Lucky has a catchphrase in They're After Me, Lucky Charms. His broken English catchphrase.
Good choice, Dave.
So hopefully you had your bowl of Lucky Charms and you let the milk get all purpley while you watch the Flintstones.
Sugar milk.
Yeah, that's half the fun. So, Ged, I'm sure there are some folks who are listening saying, who is this guy? Why don't you tell the folks a little bit about who you are and where they can find you online?
I'm an artist and icon designer by trade. I do apps for iOS, and I've been doing it been designing icons for close to 20 years, the software part of it more recently. I love doing it. It's what I come to know as my career, which is strange. I never would have thought that, but that's the way things have worked out. And you can find all the stuff that I've done at iconfactory.com or on my blog, which is Gedblog, GEDBLOG.com. You can find me on Twitter at Gideon. It's GEDEON. Simple. I was one of the first in there on Twitter, so I got my own name.
I have to admit, I'm envious that your Twitter handle is your first name.
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty cool. That never works. Whatever news service I sign up for, I'm always like, nope, Gideon's not available.
No. Does it seem crazy to say 20 years? That sounds crazy.
Believe me, it is. It's weird. Especially when I watch something like The Flintstones and I'm realizing just how old I really am. The show debuted before I was born, but
yeah, me too. I could at least say that.
But I did watch it when I was growing up, you know, in reruns or whatever. So, I mean, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, but we talked a little about sneaking sugar cereal behind our parents' back when we were kids. Were you a Saturday morning cartoon kind of kid when you were younger?
Oh, yes. I think we all of us around our age are or were.
For sure.
Yeah. I used to get up early, turn on the TV, and watch Super Friends, Schoolhouse Rock, Flintstones, any Hanna-Barbera thing I could find, you know, all of that. I watched them all every Saturday morning.
Yeah, I was right there with you on the rug. He had a watch on the rug. My parents had the big, like the RCA TV that was like the size of a Volkswagen. It was all fake wood. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But the screen was only like 19 inches across, but the thing was like 4 feet wide and weighed about 100 pounds. And like once your dad and your uncle put it down, it never moved again.
Yeah.
It was entirely too heavy.
There's so many cartoons. I can't even think of them all, you know? It's just some. I hope you do Dungeons and Dragons eventually.
I have two. I did watch it, yes. I have two huge spreadsheets. One is divided by decades, 70s and 80s, and one is every show I could find. And then I just use a random number generator to pick the cell.
Nice, nice.
On the spreadsheet. And then once I have the show selected, I use another random number generator to pick the episode. So it is truly random each week what we're going to be watching. So who knows? It might be Magilla Gorilla next week for all we know.
Or Hong Kong Fooey.
The number one super guy.
Right, right.
I'm quietly hoping for certain shows, but I don't know. It's up to the fates.
Yeah, you're going to let the technological fates decide.
Yep. Like I would love to do Droopy Dog, but for all I know, it'll never happen.
Oh, man. Droopy Dog.
Good old Droopy Dog.
What was the name of the guy, the Pink Panther guy there? He was always like, exit stage right. That guy, I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. I can't either. It's going to bug me now.
Snaggletooth? Something like that.
I did love him, though. I used to watch it. And that show also had the Blue Aardvark, right?
Yes, yes.
Oh my God, it's so many options get in so few episodes. So let's talk about the Flintstones a little bit. The show, it was the first animated primetime American television series. It was broadcast from September 30th, 1960 to April Fool's Day, 1966 on ABC. It fancifully depicted working class Stone Age people. And their next door neighbor, I guess. The show's continuing popularity rested heavily on, and this is something I've always enjoyed about it, the juxtaposition of modern everyday concerns like we would have even today in a Stone Age setting. That's where most of the puns and goofy stuff came from. And we get to see some of those tropes in this episode. Some we don't see, and we'll talk about that. The Flintstones was most financial successful network animated franchise for 30 years until The Simpsons debuted. I thought that was amazing. I had no idea.
That is amazing.
Back in 2013, TV Guide ranked the Flintstones as the second greatest TV cartoon of all time, a second only to The Simpsons. Now, as I said, there's so much more to the history and backstory of this iconic show. If you'd like to hear more, go back and listen to episode 3, where we break down a little bit more of Flintstones history. But for now, Ked, I say we get to the episode.
Sounds fun.
I was a little confused because we watched the website we went to watch this. The show started with a cold open, but I don't know if that's how it originally aired.
Yeah, I was confused too when I hit play because it didn't just start on the Flintstones theme.
Yeah.
I was confused. I was like, wait, did we miss something at the beginning? But no.
Yeah. It feels like you're jumping into the middle of the episode, and you kind of are because we return to the cold open a little later on. And we get a great pun. In the cold open, Fred, and I'm using pod quotes here, is dressed as a king and is receiving coaching on how to say this complex sentence in a foreign language that he'll have to utter at a formal event. And he's receiving this coaching from his servants, I guess, who are Guildenstone and Rosencave. Just, you know.
Right.
Very, very funny. And that sort of rock-based pun was a huge part of the humor of the Flintstones. So I was happy to get it right off the bat. So then we get the open, and Betty is visiting Fred and Wilma while Fred prepares to go on a bowling tournament. Then Wednesday arrives, as she's the babysitter. She's going to watch the kids while the ladies go out to a movie. She reports a commotion that she ran into on her way over at Rock Towers Hotel, featuring the appearance of an important-looking man who, quote, looked like a king. So right away, I know it's going to be one of those miscommunication, confusion plots that frankly drive me crazy. You just want to say, just realize what it is.
It's a very Prince and the Pauper type of episode.
Yeah, or Three's Company. Because every episode of Three's Company was Mr. Furley overhears something, he misinterprets it, and 22 minutes later, they've got it straightened out.
Right. Classic sitcom goodness.
That's family entertainment. So after Betty and Wilma leave, Wednesday picks up the phone. She raids the fridge immediately and talks to someone called Tuesday about Cliff, which I can only assume is a boy that at least one of them likes. Now, there's a little note here that I was kind of confused about. I looked this up, Ged, but I couldn't find a definitive answer. Much of the show's comedy, like we said, came from puns about rocks. You know, the Flintstones lived in bedrock. Fred works for Mr. Slate. And there were several guest stars who appeared in the show, you know, over the years, like Cary Grant, Stoney right. Curtis, Ed Sully Rock, Rock Hudstone.
Hudstone, and, yeah.
Yeah. So they made all these, like, just groan-inducing puns. Now, the exception I found was Tuesday Weld, who was an actress who was nominated for all sorts of things, and she was parodied on the show with the name Wednesday Tuesday. Now, I'm not sure if the babysitter was supposed to be her, and I really couldn't find a definitive answer while poking around.
Interesting.
But she sort of stood out for me because her name was the only one that didn't have a rock pun. It was more like a day of the week pun. So there you go, an unanswered question from Flintstones history. So back to the Rock Towers, where the king is complaining about being bored. And I wanted to ask you about this, Ged. His accent is Russian?
I'm not sure. I think it's like Lithuanian. I made a note about this because he sounds, every time he talked, he reminded me just of Gru from Despicable Me. same exact accent, you know. Like, you come over here. You do this, I will do this, you do this, you know, that kind of thing. And I love Gru, I love Despicable Me. So whenever he spoke, it kind of made me chuckle inside. And he actually kind of even sound a little bit like Steve Carell.
Yeah, Gru. He did. So. That's really funny. He was making me think of Boris from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
Who would always complain about Moose and Squirrel.
Right. It's just the over-exaggerated, generic, you know,
sort of Eastern Bloc.
Right, foreign accent kind of thing going on. You know he's not speaking, you know, quote, American.
Right. He's somehow a foreigner. So here's another classic story we've seen where the sheltered royalty, king, prince, princess, whatever, wants to break free of the shackles of their royal life and experience the other side, how the peasants live. They want to eat a hamburger and go dancing. And this, we find out quickly, is what's happening with the king himself. He wants to get out and live some life, the life of the peasants, as he keeps saying.
And he conveniently shaves his beard so he looks just like Fred.
Yes. We should mention that he looks identical to Fred. And he even sounds like the actor is doing Fred as if he had a nondescript Eastern Bloc accent.
Yes.
So we get back to the bowling alley after all this happens, and Barney is practicing. He's wondering why Fred hasn't arrived yet, because they're just minutes from the start of the big bowling tournament. The king's servants return, and this part actually made me laugh. It really did. The king's servants return to the king's room, and they find he's missing. And he wrote a message on the mirror, which reads, "I took ye bedsheet, slid me down, and now tonight I'm on ye town." Made me laugh for a couple of reasons. First, it's goofy and funny. And second, he didn't so much write the note on the window. He had to have a hammer and chisel and take the time to carve it.
And all of a sudden he's Shakespeare. Like, what's that about?
I don't know. And they comment on his skills as a poet. Actually, they deride his skills as a poet.
Yes.
But I thought that was hilarious. That part made me laugh out loud because I could just picture him trying to hurriedly chisel a note in the slab of rock they were calling Ymir before the two get back. They take off to find him, and we get, oh, God, this brought me back, a classic Hanna-Barbera running feet sound effect.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, where you jump in the air and your feet start going, but you don't begin moving until you finish the sentence you're speaking. So totally. It's like, oh,
yeah, they do that in Scooby-Doo a lot. I love that, Scooby-Doo.
I love it, too. It's hilarious. So maybe I'll insert the sound effect here so you can go and take a good listen to it. It brought me right back to those days of sitting on the rug watching TV.
That's very cool.
Meanwhile, Fred is traveling to the bowling alley, and we get the classic, another trope from Hanna-Barbera, the repeating background.
Background, yes. I love that.
I love it, too. It made me think, because all these cartoons were hand-drawn, so they had to do whatever they could, I would imagine, to make it as efficient and bring down the workload as possible.
Yeah, and I made another note about that, which is funny that you mentioned that. When they go and they're in the club and the people are dancing behind the girls or whatever, all the people in the background are just like blue.
You know? Right.
They're not actually filled in. They're not actually inked in. They don't have like features, eyes, noses, and mouths. They're just blue outlines of people.
Right.
You know? And that's totally to save money. It's quickly inking those generic figures back there and animating them in a very, very short loop.
Yeah, I was going to say they're doing maybe the same second and a half of animation just over and over.
Right.
Yeah. So, and there was one episode of Family Guy that famously made fun of the repeating background. Peter and I think Brian were running through Quahog, and suddenly the neighborhood changed to bedrock. It was like several seconds before they noticed it was like the same house and tree just over and over in the background. I thought that was great.
I mean, just think about it for a minute. You know, I mean, back in the day, back in the 60s, this is a half hour every week.
Yeah.
Of traditional animation. This is not computer animation. This is hand-drawn, hand-inked, hand-painted animation.
Yeah.
You know, it's labor-intensive, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Hanna-Barbera was like the only company in the world that could really do this on a week-to-week basis. And I'm impressed that they actually are able to do that at all, you know?
Yeah.
The fact that they did is a testament to them.
For sure. When I was a kid, one of the, symptoms of this, but I could tell what item in a scene was going to move because it was a slightly different color because it was on a cell.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened in this too. There was one scene where there's three garage doors in a row and the center one was just a little different blue. And I was, oh, that's going to open. And there it went. It opened. So the royal servants see him. Oh, I'm sorry. Fred's traveling to the bowling alley. That's where we were. And the royal servants see him scoot by, and yes, the confusion begins. They beg him to return, and Fred has no idea who they are, of course, because he's Fred. So they clobber him on the head and knock him clear unconscious, and we're back in the hotel. There's a lot of people getting knocked in the head in this episode. It made me remember how funny it was to watch people get knocked in the head and how much I enjoyed it, because there's a lot of people getting knocked in the head. So they try to convince him to act as the king because I didn't quite get this. They were in debt or something and they needed to pay something off.
Yeah, they had a whole bunch of appointments and people they had to meet. And yeah.
Right. So it's another classic repeating background. As they're trying to convince Fred, he's saying, no, I'm not having it. And he's trying to walk out. And the one is sort of holding onto his leg and the other one's trying to stop him and is pushing him forward. But Fred is so strong. He's just dragging them along. And this has to be just a massive hotel room because this goes on for a good minute.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the same like window, couch, window, couch, window, couch over and over again. So Fred agrees to do it for 3,000 Well, not dollars, but their money. He'll do it. So that's it. The king later on zooms past the bowling alley in his real big fancy stone car. I loved that.
Mm. It's kind of like a Porsche.
It is, but yeah. It was. You could tell it was just carved from like a single piece of stone.
Right.
I can't even imagine what it must weigh. So the king arrives at a drive-in, like a fast food joint, and he orders, quote, what the peasants eat, which the waitress doesn't even balk at. She's okay, and she goes back inside. Barney catches up, and speaking of the animation, Ged, I love this scene because you can really see like the cells over the background. Right. There's one shot where Fred and Barney are talking, and it's clear that Fred and Barney are laying on top of a background, on top of something. I really loved that.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it's either dust or dirt or whatever gets in between there, or the cells aren't quite aligned, you know, and so they kind of stand off and they cast that slight shadow.
Yeah.
You know, on the background. That kind of thing that South Park was going for at the beginning, but now doesn't care about anymore.
I just found it really charming to think that a person is laying that down and taking a picture and then laying the next one down. It was cute. So Barney tries to get the king to go with him. And when his food arrives, he dumps it all over Barney. It's just this giant bowl of the brown food the peasants eat, I guess.
The gruel.
Yes. So now we're at the dance club you mentioned earlier, the Cactus Lagogo. And the king is enjoying, quote, the folk dancing in this country. He's really getting down and dancing with one girl while the blue people that you mentioned dance in the background. That happens for a little while later, and the king's night on the town continues at the roller rink. Barney again fails to get who he is calling Fred back, but they do win the waltz competition by fighting on roller skates. And here's the second time someone gets clobbered in the head. The king clobbers Barney it's the third time with the trophy. So now we arrive back at the scene that was the cold open, and it makes a little more sense. We see that exact same scene. Betty and Wilma, now free from their movie. The movie's over. They had a nice time. They decide to stop at the hotel for a coffee, where they come upon the ball that is for the king of, we find out, Stone Sylvania. which is another stone-based pun. Wilma and Betty, of course, notice the resemblance right away, and eventually he is found out and he flees. So we go back to Barney, who is physically carrying the king to Fred's home because Barney saw him dancing with this random floozy and now is, you know, afraid for the state of his friend's marriage. So he's just hauling him back like a fireman carry. He does clobber Barney for the fifth clobber of the episode with a stop sign. At the hotel, Wilma clobbers the king. Finally, Barney finds the real Fred and clobbers him. And then the royal servants grab him. And once inside the royal suite, the whole gang is reunited. Like I said, I find this type of misunderstanding-based plot just frustrating. And at this point, I was ready for it to end. And at this point, we also get another classic trope that I associate more with Scooby-Doo than Fred, the Flintstones, and it's what I call the impossible doors chase. So you've got a hallway or some sort of like maybe horseshoe-shaped room where the gang goes from door A to door B, but then they emerge from door D, and then someone comes out of door E and goes into door A.
Man, they should do like a supercut of that. I wonder if there's any supercuts in that on YouTube.
There has to be.
There has to be, because it's used so much, not just in cartoons, in TV shows too. But I mean, of course, it was just started in cartoons.
Right.
Well, man.
So the misunderstanding is cleared up. And as their reward, the gang is invited to the ball to participate and have a good time. So they get to go to the royal ball, which is really fancy. The king gets his money so they can pay off their debt. And Fred receives his check for 3,000, whatever it is, Stone Sylvania dollars, which Barney, being the smart one, asks what that sort of exchanges into in bedrock money. And he finds out it is $3.95. Now, since that was in 1964, I wanted to do the inflation calculation for 2016, and it turns out to be $30.43 for his trouble.
That's okay. That's not too bad.
It's not too bad. He got $30 for doing basically nothing.
I'm impressed that you actually went and figured that out, though. That's great.
It would have bothered me if I didn't. And that was our episode. Before we get into the little trivia, let's just talk about our overall impressions of the episode. It had the one thing I wanted to mention again that it didn't have that I was a little disappointed is an animal that is the machinery of a machine.
Right.
Like the trash compactor is like a bird or something. I was kind of bummed out because that's something I associate with the Flintstones and really wanted to see.
Yeah. Did we see Dino? We didn't even see Dino in this episode.
No, there was no Dino at all.
Yeah, I was disappointed about that.
We got a little Pebbles and Bam Bam, but not much.
Yeah. No Dino, though. That's a bummer.
I do like Dino. It's funny, when I was doing research for this show, I read that Dino's color changed from season to season. He was once like a very pronounced purple, then almost blue. And there's a way to sort of, if you see Dino, you could tell what season it is by what color his skin is.
Interesting.
Kind of like the X-Files, you know, the further you got into, Gillian Anderson's hair just got redder and redder and redder.
I'm sure all of the scientific names for the dinosaurs in the Flintstones are all wrong now, too.
Of course. Right.
There used to be brontosauruses and things that are no longer real dinosaurs.
Right. But no more brontosaurus burgers.
Nope.
So, Ged, this episode did give me a laugh with the little message in the mirror. And so that was entertaining enough. And I loved the charm of the animation. So I think overall I liked this episode. What are your thoughts?
I liked it too. I mean, I like the fact that it's the first episode of the Flintstones I've watched in, I don't know how long, maybe
10, I know, me too.
10, 15 years, you know? And it is nostalgic to watch something like this, especially taken with all of the voice acting. They did a really good job, you know? And the guy who plays Fred, especially so. I don't know the actor that plays Fred Flintstone, but I mean, he's really versatile and he's got a lot of talent, as they all do. But just to hear their work on the voiceover stuff was really great.
Yeah. So
it was fun. And I do like the homespun feel of it. You know, it's all hand drawn, hand painted, you know, back before computers and the whole sterile thing. You know, so you can tell, I mean, they love what they're doing and it shows.
Yeah, for sure. And it was a lot of work. And I can just, like I said, I love the charm of thinking of someone, you know, painting a cell, waiting for it to dry, putting it down, taking a photo. It's nice. It felt really good.
So many thousands of cells, hand-drawn cells for an episode like this. And where are they all? I don't know, but they're somewhere.
They're somewhere. Someone's hoarding them somewhere.
Yep.
So we'll just wrap up the episode with a little bit of trivia. This episode that we watched this week is a reworking of episode 22, The Tycoon, which is basically the same plot. Flintstones was originally made with adults in mind, and it was the first primetime cartoon to have a laugh track because they wanted to, of course, imitate other shows with laugh tracks. And for a while, The Flintstones was sponsored by Winston Cigarettes. And we'll actually have audio from a commercial of Fred and Wilma talking about how much they enjoy a good Winston at the end of the day.
Wow.
It's funny because it would just never happen today.
No way. A kid's cartoon sponsoring cigarettes? Wow.
Yep, it's really crazy. Like I said, the first primetime cartoon, there were a lot of firsts with this show. Fred and Wilma were the first couple to be shown in bed together on primetime TV. After the Flintstones' daughter Pebbles was born, Betty was depressed about her inability to conceive a child. This was the first time an animated show addressed the issue of infertility. And so the Rebels then adopted their son, Bam Bam. The 1959 unaired pilot was called The Flagstones and featured the first two seasons of the show didn't have the familiar Flintstones theme. They had an instrumental called Rise and Shine, which I didn't know. That was our episode on Season 5, Episode 12 of The Flintstones, King for a Night. Overall, a fun episode. Some of the tropes we've grown to love from The Flintstones and a little bit of cheesy puns as well. That is our show for this week, and I would love to thank you, Ged, for hanging out, eating some cereal, and talking about The Flintstones with me.
Just like the good old days, Dave. I loved it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Next week, I'll release another prequel episode so you'll know what to watch and eat in time for episode 6. I can't believe I'm talking about episode 6 already. In the meantime, you can follow Cereal Sommelier on Twitter and Instagram. Finally, tell your friends about the show and leave a star rating or review on iTunes. And I will catch you next time.